Today I signed legislation and an executive order to hold China accountable for its oppressive actions against the people of Hong Kong.
Beijing is none too happy about that. This is Thursday, July 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, there is continuing friction between the U.S. and China on the issue of the South China Sea. The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there is a way to curtail the COVID-19 pandemic in the country. It is all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump Tuesday signed legislation that slaps sanctions on Chinese officials who undermine Hong Kong's autonomy and an executive order that ends preferential treatment to the Chinese Special Autonomous Region. In his remarks, Trump sought to portray himself as tougher on China than his political opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swera has this story.
President Donald Trump announced his administration's latest move to pressure China.
Today I signed legislation and an executive order to hold China accountable for its oppressive actions against the people of Hong Kong.
The Hong Kong Autonomy Act imposes sanctions on people or entities that conduct business with Chinese officials responsible for implementing Beijing's new national security law in Hong Kong. The legislation also gives the president the power to seize the officials' assets and block their entry to the U.S. Zach Cooper is a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where he studies U.S. strategy in Asia.
I think the administration is saying that this is probably a signal that we're past the point of trying to convince Beijing to back off from Hong Kong and now just imposing costs on it for the behavior that it's taking.
Trump's executive order ends preferential treatment for Hong Kong, which will now be treated the same as mainland China. This week, the Trump administration also succeeded in pressuring Britain to remove Chinese telecom giant Huawei from its 5G network. The president positioned himself as tougher on China than his opponent, Democratic former Vice President Joe Biden, the presumptive candidate running against Trump in the November election.
Joe Biden's entire career has been a gift to the Chinese Communist Party and to the calamity of errors that they've made.
Biden has criticized Trump for instigating a trade war with China and also presents himself as tough on Beijing.
The Chinese are spending multiple billions of dollars trying to own the technology of the future while we sit with our thumb in our ear.
China will be an important issue in the U.S. election, says Zach Cooper.
Both sides are a bit vulnerable here. And I think, frankly, the president might be more vulnerable. You know, the president's got a trade deal with China, which he signed this January. And the trade deal doesn't protect against some of the very things that the president seems to be most upset by right now. And it included provisions about agriculture purchases, which are particularly helpful, obviously, in electorally important states in the upper Midwest.
Trump recently said that relationship with China has been severely damaged by Beijing's handling of the pandemic and that he is not interested in talking to China about the second phase of the trade deal. Meanwhile, China is imposing sanctions on American defense firm Lockheed Martin after Washington approved a potential $620 million upgrade package for missiles to Taiwan and sanctions against Republican Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, both known to be critical of China. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
China announced it will impose retaliatory sanctions over U.S. individuals and entities after the U.S. president signed into law that Hong Kong Autonomy Act. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Chunying said the act violated international law and grossly interfered in China's internal affairs. She added, "We urge the United States to correct its mistakes, refrain from implementing the so-called Hong Kong Autonomy Act, and stop interfering in any way with China's internal affairs, including Hong Kong affairs. If the United States insisted on doing so, China will definitely make a strong response." Hong Kong is not the only growing rift between the United States and China. That story is next. VOA Asia continues. The United States said Monday China's claims to offshore resources across most of the South China Sea are completely unlawful, as is Beijing's campaign of bullying to control them. The Hague-based Permanent Court of Arbitration, in a binding decision issued on July 12, 2016, rejected China's maritime claims as having no basis in international law. China dismissed the ruling. Grant Newsham is a senior research fellow with the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo. VOA's Steve Miller spoke with him via Skype about the timing of Washington's statement.
So, but why the Trump administration has finally sort of said enough is an interesting question. And my guess is that it has something to do with events in probably say the last 4 or 5 months, where Chinese aggression and pushing has really gotten to the point all along its borders, from Japan to the Philippines, down to Malaysia, Indonesia, over to India, that I think it has reached a point where the administration said, you know, I would say we have nothing to lose, but the time is now. China may have rolled the dice and see how much they can get and may be ready. And who knows, maybe there's something haven't heard, but that, you know, they are perhaps willing to take their shot, say, against Taiwan, maybe one of the offshore islands or in the East China Sea, the Senkakus with Japan. But I think it was Chinese behavior that has provoked this. And somehow the cumulative effect of what they've been doing, but I think the specifics of what they have, what has happened since the virus outbreak, I think that is alarming enough to cause the administration to do something no other administration has done and basically say, we side with everybody else and not with China.
Is it too little too late? Because when you look at the events that have taken place in the South China Sea, with Beijing's reclamation projects on different shoals to build bases essentially out of nothing, they're entrenched there. So what does a statement like this have in terms of quantifiable potential?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. And that is the key question. I think it's what everybody wants to know, particularly the other countries in the region, because as you note, it's late in the day, and that China has been allowed to really insinuate itself and into the South China Sea physically and has a pretty strong military presence and the ability to almost exercise de facto military control as things stand. So what you have is the Americans have now said enough. You know, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to accept this behavior. And now the question is, you can imagine the Chinese saying, well, you know, I'm sure they're apoplectic as it is. But you can almost hear them saying, like some guy from Brooklyn, well, what are you going to do about it? And that's the question, is what are the Americans going to do and what can they do? They are going to have to, you know, beef up their military because currently the U.S. Navy just doesn't have enough ships. The Air Force needs more aircraft. But so they are going to have to do that. You know, this isn't going to be done on the cheap.
I wanted to ask you about ASEAN. You know, ASEAN has been trying to hammer out a definitive code of conduct with China for the South China Sea for a number of years. Where do you see things going with that body as a whole, with the claimants interacting with China?
The ASEAN nations know that they're being trifled with by the Chinese. You know, this code of conduct has been almost 20 years in the making now. And some of the Chinese demands have been absolutely outrageous. But ASEAN, I think, as I noted, they want an option. If you can give, you know, if there's somebody that they can turn to or align with that can help fend off Chinese pressure and domination, I think they'll be receptive to that. But they're going to, as they always are, I think they are going to be careful and quiet about how they do it. But, you know, I think that is where you can make some. The Americans can make some advances, but also, say, bolster their own position, because the more friends you have, even if they're quietly cooperating, the better.
VOA's Steve Miller talking with Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on Wednesday the United States will support countries that believe China has violated their maritime claims in the South China Sea, but stressed doing so in multilateral and legal forums.
So we will then go use the tools that we have available, and we will support countries all across the world who recognize that China has violated their legal territorial claims as well, or maritime claims as well, and we'll go provide them the assistance we can, whether that's in multilateral bodies, or whether that's in ASEAN, whether that's through legal responses. We'll use all the tools we can.
Pompeo added that high-level talks were continuing between the U.S. and China, but added that the Chinese Communist Party is putting freedom and democracy at risk by their expansionist, imperialist, authoritarian behavior. He also said that he was sure the World Health Organization investigation into China's handling of the coronavirus would be a completely whitewashed investigation. Happening now in Asia, students and educators are expressing relief and joy after the U.S. government withdrew a rule requiring international students to be on campus this autumn or risk losing their visa status. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for spending your time with us at VOA Asia. U.S. researchers say an experimental coronavirus vaccine has shown promising immune responses in an ongoing early-stage study. The potential new vaccine was manufactured by U.S.-based biotech firm Moderna and developed by researchers at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. In a report published in the New England Journal of Medicine Tuesday, the researchers gave two doses of the experimental vaccine to 45 volunteers whose ages ranged between 18 and 55. The researchers said none of the volunteers experienced a serious side effect, but more than half reported mild or moderate reactions, such as fatigue, headaches, chills, muscle aches, and pain at the injection site. Cases in the U.S. keep climbing, averaging about 62,000 new cases a day over the past 7 days, more than triple the number just a month ago and up more than 21% compared with the 7-day average a week ago. That from a CNBC analysis of the data from Johns Hopkins University. Texas, California, and Florida accounted for almost 32,000 new cases on Tuesday, nearly half of all new cases reported across the country. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Tuesday called on Americans to wear masks to help contain the spread of the virus. Dr. Robert Redfield told VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren the U.S. could get its outbreak under control in a relatively short period of time.
The key is the mask. If we all, if this whole nation really decided to make the personal responsibility and sacrifice, like many of our ancestors had to do in World War I and World War II, if we just all did one thing, we all just decided for the next 4, 6, 8 weeks we're going to wear masks, all of us, this outbreak would really come to a halt.
You can hear and see the complete interview with Dr. Redfield at voanews.com and many of our social media platforms. As India's cases of COVID-19 near the 1 million mark, cities like New Delhi, home to over 20 million people, are ramping up their health infrastructure to cope with the pandemic. As India emerges as a global hotspot, experts say the pandemic has turned the spotlight on the country's grossly inadequate healthcare system, even in its biggest cities. Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi has the report.
Suhasini Sood made frantic calls to hospitals when her parents were infected with COVID-19 last month in case their condition deteriorated.
You'd read in the news that, people had gone to hospitals and hospitals had refused patients, and that they'd said that no beds were available. So that was a big fear. We'd also called up a few hospitals to check whether they would take the patients in, and some of them had flat out refused.
To plug the shortfall of hospital beds, cities like Delhi have set up huge temporary COVID care centres. This 10,000-bed facility, fitted with cardboard beds and operated by the paramilitary, opened recently in a religious centre. It is one of the world's largest. Delhi's race to convert train coaches, hotels and even marriage halls into care centres was inevitable. Whether India overhauls its public health facilities remains to be seen. For the time being, the world's third worst affected country faces a long and hard battle as cases race toward the 1 million mark. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Make sure you stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.